Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan. Season 9, Episode 18, The Fall of the Ashikaga. By 1570, things had become incredibly tense between various leaders of the ruling coalition in Kyoto. Ashikaga Yoshiaki was chafing under the severe restraints placed upon him by Nobunaga, who was eager to pacify the clans of Kansai and secure his own position. The emperor liked Nobunaga, though even he was starting to grow suspicious of the Owari Daimyo's ulterior motives. While Nobunaga had seemed happy to restore absentee estate income to the nobility of the capital, he was extremely unwilling to extend the same courtesy to the big temples. In fact, just before he entered the capital, he exacted a tax upon several temples to help pay for repairs to various buildings in Kyoto and to help fund his construction projects. The Asakura clan had ignored his summons, and thus Nobunaga had a just cause for attacking them. In order to get to Echizen province, where the Asakura ruled over an uncharacteristically peaceful domain, Nobunaga would have to travel through Omi province from south to north, which would take him through the domain of the Azai clan. We discussed the Azai briefly in the previous episode, noting how Nobunaga had arranged a marriage between his sister Oichi and Azai Nagamasa to cement an alliance between the clans. Oichi deserves some attention at this point. She was said to have been extremely beautiful, as well as clever and observant. Supposedly, Nobunaga himself had once remarked that if she had been born a man, she would have made a fine warrior. Like many other women from samurai clans during Sengoku, she was valued as an advisor and frequently offered counsel to her brother and later to her husband. Since moving to North Omi province, she bore a son and three daughters. The Azai clan was a complicated group. While the daimyo Nagamasa wanted to honor his commitment to peace with Nobunaga, his retainers insisted that they side with the Asakura clan, to whom they were so indebted for their help against the Rokkaku. The rank-and-file samurai were likewise generally disposed very favorably toward their Asakura neighbors and had a low opinion of Nobunaga, a distant daimyo who now marched large armies through their domain. In spite of his commitment to Nobunaga, Nagamasa could not very well ignore the demands of his retainers, vassals, and family members if he hoped to avert an uprising within his own clan or even his own assassination. In late spring of 1570, Nobunaga assembled an army of 30,000 warriors to assault the strongholds of the Asakura clan. They marched north through Omi province and through the Azai clan's territory. Nagamasa and his forces, meanwhile, prepared to respond to this provocation with a sound strategy which could have meant the end of Nobunaga. The plan was to allow him to reach Asakura territory, then the Azai would attack his army from the rear, while the Asakura assaulted the vanguard. This unexpected pincer maneuver would have devastating consequences for the Oda army if the Azai could perform it successfully. However, the story goes that as Nobunaga's army began its assault against Kanegasaki Fortress, he received a message dispatched by his sister, Oichi. The contents of this message were strange. A sack of beans which had two openings on opposite ends, both of them tied. Supposedly, this was meant to be a good luck charm. Utilizing what I assume to have been some kind of childhood inside joke, however, Nobunaga understood a deeper meaning behind the gift. She was warning him that his army was about to be attacked from two sides. Although his sister was warning him about a trap after he had already stumbled into its jaws, those jaws had not yet snapped shut. He ordered an immediate withdrawal, and his army, well organized and disciplined, quickly divided into two large groups to take separate paths south to escape the impending carnage. Kinoshita Tokichiro was given command of the rear guard, one of the riskiest positions in an army executing a hasty withdrawal. However, it proved to be one of Tokichiro's finest moments, and he successfully kept his division together as they fended off attacks from the Azai samurai who attempted to harry them. Nobunaga and the vast majority of his army returned to the capital. The big man himself was extremely furious about the Azai clan's betrayal and immediately sought ways to punish them, and anyone who would dare maintain a friendship with them. He called up reinforcements from Tokugawa Ieyasu, who soon arrived with 5,000 troops. Taking somewhere between 20 and 25,000 of his own, Nobunaga and Ieyasu marched north to confront the Azai and Asakura clans, who were assembling their own joint army in northern Omi province. The two forces met at the Ane River, which feeds Lake Biwa. The Oda army focused their efforts on the assembled Azai army, who were their primary target, while the Tokugawa forces battled with the Asakura. The armies clashed while wading across the river, and the fighting was intense as the stakes were high for both sides. The Tokugawa gradually encircled and overcame the Asakura, and then smashed into the beleaguered Azai troops who were on the verge of breaking. The Oda clan utilized firearms, as was their habit, and although they only counted 500 arquebusiers among their warriors, their effect was devastating. By the time the Tokugawa charged to support the Oda advance, the Azai had no hope of holding the field and fled in an all-out rout. While this victory must have held a certain satisfaction for Nobunaga, neither of these enemy clans had been eliminated entirely. For the moment, he needed to return to the capital and make a plan for containing yet another enemy whose sheer numbers and inclination toward rebellion made them, in Nobunaga's eyes, a threat to the lasting peace he was attempting to create through force of arms. I am speaking of our old friends, the Ikkō Ikki. Although they had not achieved the same level of independence which their brethren in Kaga province enjoyed, the militant Pure Land believers in central Japan had managed to concentrate their numbers in a few key areas. In southern Chubu and Kansai, they managed to seize some disused fortifications in Ise province near the border with Owari. This network of seven swamp castles was called Nagashima. While Nobunaga certainly disliked this band of egalitarian revolutionaries squatting so flagrantly in his home domains, another such Ikkō group had taken up residence in a fortress near the port city of Sakai, which was a strategic threat he could not tolerate. The fortress in question was called Ishiyama Honganji, and it was a formidable fortification which was believed to be unbreachable. The Ikkō who lived in that castle functioned like an independent faction, making treaties with nearby daimyo and diligently patrolling the countryside around their base. They were also quite friendly with the Miyoshi clan, who had begun sending agents to Kyoto in 1570 to attempt to spur an uprising against Nobunaga and Yoshiaki. Thus, in spite of his victory at the Battle of Anegawa, Nobunaga's situation in 1570 was not particularly stellar. To his west was the Honganji Fortress and the Miyoshi clan. To his north was the Azai-Asakura alliance, who were already preparing to assault outlying Oda clan fortifications, and to his southeast was the Nagashima Fortress Network. Strategically speaking, he was quite literally surrounded. Knowing that he could not attack in every direction at once, he again turned to his trusted retainers and gave some of them an unenviable assignment: to besiege the Ishiyama Honganji Fortress. You know, the one said to be impregnable. Utilizing a strategy now very familiar to us, he specifically ordered them to build castles around the fortress so that a proper siege and assault could be supported in the future. He had no illusions that his brave retainers would actually assault this place themselves, but merely desired that it be nullified for the moment so he could limit his focus to other areas of concern. This detachment of the Oda army would occasionally be attacked by Ikkō warriors and warrior monks from allied temples in Ki province to the south, but they continued their siege. In the fall of 1570, the Azai and Asakura clans attacked some of the Oda clan holdings in Omi province, killing one of Nobunaga's younger brothers in the process. The Azai and Asakura advance as far as Mount Hiei, taking shelter at Enryakuji Temple. The Oda in Kyoto responded by besieging the mountain, and things would have probably turned ugly if not for the intervention of Emperor Ogimachi, who called for peace between them in hopes of saving the temple itself. Nobunaga agreed to this, still vying for imperial support to irritate Yoshiaki, and the Azai and Asakura agreed to withdraw. Much as Nobunaga may have wanted to pursue his enemies in northern Omi, he was more immediately concerned with taking on the monks of the Nagashima Fortress Network in Ise Province. In the spring of 1571, Nobunaga sent a force led by Shibata Katsuie to take on the Ikkō fortresses near his home province. Unfortunately for those warriors, the Ikkō Ikki had prepared for them, utilizing the local irrigation system which was intended to prevent flooding, in order to make the water level in the swamp very low. When Katsuie called for his cavalry to charge across the river to seize an island near to one of the fortresses, the horses' hooves met with difficulty in the muddy river and were also tripped up by stakes and ropes which had been laid on the riverbed. The Ikkō Ikki who defended were not a massive, unruly mob of fanatics, but had gained some experience in contemporary warfare. They wielded not only the traditional bows and blades of the samurai, but had adopted firearms as well. As the Oda clan army struggled to reach the opposite bank, they utilized those guns, firing into the cavalry and shredding the vanguard. The first attempt at besieging Nagashima was almost a complete disaster. One of the retainers from Mino Province, Ujie Naotomo, died in the ensuing struggle, and Shibata Katsuie was wounded. Forced to withdraw, they returned to Nobunaga, setting fire to many outlying villages which supported the Nagashima network as they made their way out of the area. In the fall of 1571, Nobunaga had worked out his next move. Because of their previous support of the Azai and Asakura clans, and because their temple could be so easily used as a forward base by future enemies intent on seizing the capital, Nobunaga decided that Enryakuji Temple must be destroyed. His army surrounded the mountain and gradually worked their way up, setting fire to the villages nearby whose residents fled to the temple complex on the peak. The leading monks of Enryakuji offered money to avert the oncoming assault, but Nobunaga flatly refused. His warriors stormed the temple complex, killing indiscriminately and setting fire to the buildings, sutras, and domiciles. The Sōhei warrior monks of Enryakuji mounted a bold defense, but in the end there is little reason to believe that many people on the temple grounds escaped Nobunaga's terrible wrath that day. It is difficult to be certain about the death toll, but I think figures between 1,500 and 3,000 sound about right, though some sources claim it was as high as 4,000. The razing of Enryakuji Temple and the subsequent slaughter of the civilians and non-combatants within, which included women and children, made Oda Nobunaga infamous across the country. Those inclined toward religion referred to him thereafter as Oni Daimyo, the Demon Daimyo. There were a few high-profile survivors who managed to escape in the confusion, many of whom sought shelter with Takeda Shingen all the way in Kanto. The daimyo of the Takeda clan was starting to become something of a faraway beacon of hope for those who opposed Nobunaga, and many sought to encourage him to bring his impressive military machine to bear against the Oni daimyo, who seemed bent on bloody conquest and sacrilege. Takeda Shingen seems to have been moved by this pleading and began planning a long battlefield march to the capital. In 1571, he fought what would be his last battle against Uesugi Kenshin at the Tone River, the result of which was a stalemate and mutual disengagement. The Uesugi had been on a campaign to reclaim the Kanto, which Kenshin claimed should be subordinate to him because he had inherited the title of Kanto Kanrei. The campaign was not a complete disaster for the Uesugi, but it was also not really a smashing success. With the Uesugi withdrawing to Echigo and so many people begging for Shingen's help against the Fool of Owari, the time seemed ripe for him to roll the dice and take his army west. In August of 1572, he sent his retainer Akiyama Nobutomo, one of his 24 generals, to make an initial incursion into Oda territory by besieging Iwamura Castle in eastern Mino Province. This fortress was held by Lady Otsuya, Nobunaga's aunt, in trust for her adopted son, who was one of Nobunaga's biological sons. The garrison soon surrendered after Lady Otsuya negotiated with Akiyama, and both she and her son were taken into custody as hostages of the Takeda, and, as part of the conditions she had agreed to, she was married to Akiyama soon after they arrived in Kai Province. This hostile action by the Takeda was a clear violation of the peace which had been established between themselves and the Oda clan, and Nobunaga greatly feared what might happen if he had to contend directly with Takeda Shingen, who was reputed to be a great genius on the battlefield. Luckily for Nobunaga, there was someone willing to act as a buffer between him and the fearsome Tiger of Kai, Tokugawa Ieyasu. In October of 1572, just 2 months after the seizure of Iwamura Castle, Shingen finalized a delicate truce with the Hojo clan. As soon as snow blocked the usual passages the Uesugi took to make incursions into Shinano, he prepared to bring his fearsome 30,000-strong army to bear against the Tokugawa clan in Totomi Province. The Takeda and the Tokugawa had been engaged in a long-standing conflict since 1569, which we will explore in greater detail in the next episode. Thus, by attacking the Tokugawa domains, Takeda Shingen was not by default directly attacking the Oda clan, regardless of their presence among their Tokugawa allies. Tokugawa Ieyasu had already begun to hone a reputation as a clever commander, and Totomi Province had, by this point, largely come under his control. However, the rapid advance of the Takeda clan soon resulted in several outlying castles falling to the invaders, while Ieyasu still assembled his army at Hamamatsu Castle. His own troops numbered around 8,000, while the reinforcements sent by Nobunaga were a meager 3,000 or so, meaning they were outnumbered by the Takeda army by a little less than 3-1. Ieyasu's retainers and the commanders of the Oda reinforcements mostly gave him the same advice: let the Takeda pass through and seek some way to cut their supply line and harass them from the rear later on. Ieyasu disregarded this advice, insisting that they could defeat the mighty Takeda horde by attacking from an elevated position and utilizing firearms against the feared Takeda cavalry. Thus, in early 1572, they assembled on a high plain near the Takeda army, who deployed and waited for them to make a move. I have to wonder whether Tokugawa Ieyasu believed that his own personal Okehazama moment had finally arrived. It's just speculation, of course, but gaining an impressive victory against an able foe who grossly outnumbered him would certainly have elevated his fortunes, and perhaps provided even more land for him to conquer in Kanto afterward. If he believed he was about to pull a Nobunaga, he was sadly mistaken. He had his gunners advance down the hill to discourage a cavalry charge. The Takeda began their charge, the Tokugawa arquebuses fired, and the Takeda kept charging. I was unable to find any details about why the gunfire failed to stop the charge. It could be that the Takeda had developed some kind of tactic for avoiding mass casualties from gunfire, perhaps riding in a loose formation before the musketeers shot, then closing the gaps and charging en masse while the hapless gunners were busy reloading. It could also be that the Takeda outnumbered their foe almost 3-1, and numbers absolutely mattered in a situation like this. The cavalry decimated the arquebusiers and soon followed up their initial success with an encirclement maneuver, crushing the Tokugawa and Oda troops on the army's right flank and sending cavalry to ride around and smash the rearguard while more fresh troops attacked the front. The Battle of Mikatagahara was a complete and utter disaster for the Tokugawa clan, and Ieyasu himself barely escaped with his life. At this point, Nobunaga sought a diplomatic solution in a way that I find kind of hilarious. He wrote a letter to Takeda Shingen proposing that he, Nobunaga, mediate a lasting truce between Shingen and his arch-enemy, Uesugi Kenshin, and he claimed to act in the name of the rightful shogun, Ashikaga Yoshiaki. He did this hoping that Shingen would refuse, which would mean he was refusing an order from the shogun, an act of treason. Nobunaga could then brand whomever gave assistance to Shingen as rebels as well, and have all the just cause he needed for openly attacking the Takeda and whoever sided with them. He also hoped to gain support among the other Kansai daimyo, who had thus far been unwilling to openly support him. The clever Shingen saw through this trap, however, and informed Nobunaga that he would happily accept the mediation of the shogun's official regent, but not from Nobunaga himself. I can picture Oda Nobunaga's face turning red at this reply, since the shogun's official regent was Asakura Yoshikage, his hated enemy. There followed what historian George Sansom called a documentary battle, in which both Nobunaga and Shingen wrote extensive public letters detailing various articles of treason which the other had allegedly committed. But what this meant practically was that an actual showdown seemed imminent. It certainly didn't help Nobunaga's cause that Yoshiaki's correspondence had begun to cross a line. Rather than the usual advice over how to make peace between the great clans, the shogun was now openly soliciting support, both financial and military, to help rid him of the troublesome Nobunaga once and for all. In early spring of 1573, Nobunaga could no longer ignore Yoshiaki's troublemaking. He arranged for the bakufu to draw up charges against the shogun, numbering 17 articles. He then attempted to take the shogun into custody by surrounding Nijo Palace, the very gilded cage which he had built for the ungrateful claimant, but Yoshiaki managed to escape and hid in various places throughout Kyoto from Nobunaga's hunters. Nobunaga departed, moving into Omi province with an army ready for his inevitable clash with Shingen. Meanwhile, Takeda Shingen completed his pacification of Totomi province and had moved into Mikawa province to continue winning victories against the beleaguered Tokugawa clan. A few months after Yoshiaki and Nobunaga's final falling out, the Takeda army had just overrun Noda Castle and was preparing to threaten Okazaki Castle, the traditional headquarters of the Tokugawa clan, where Ieyasu now prepared his defenses. However, in May of 1573, Takeda Shingen died while his army was encamped. The precise cause of his death is unknown. The three most common stories are a mysterious sniper, an old war wound finally taking its toll, and succumbing to pneumonia. Whatever the truth, Shingen was dead, and the threat he presented was neutralized for the moment. At least, neutralized enough for Nobunaga to put it aside and focus on smoking out his closer enemy, Yoshiaki. Nobunaga was quick to act and had prepared so well for a surprise return to the capital that I wonder if that was his plan all along, regardless of Shingen's untimely passing. On August 27th of 1573, he and his army entered Kyoto once more, and Yoshiaki fled for his life, seeking shelter at a temple, shaving his head, and taking vows as a Buddhist monk. While Nobunaga arranged for the bakufu to declare his deposition, Yoshiaki himself never relinquished his title, nor did he give up hope that some other powerful hero would restore him to his rightful position at the head of the nation's samurai government. No such hero would ever emerge, and although Yoshiaki would eventually outlive Nobunaga, he would never be restored as shogun. August 27, 1573 is considered the official ending date of the Muromachi shogunate, and thus the end of the Muromachi period. That's right, everyone. We made it. From the early days of the anti-Hojo uprising, the ascension of Ashikaga Takauji and the ensuing Nanbokucho War, to the golden age of Yoshimitsu and the eventual rise of the Kanrei and their puppet shoguns, the Ashikaga Bakufu had its shares of ups and downs. They are generally considered politically to have been the weakest of the three shogunates who ruled Japan. They never really gained control over Kyushu, and frankly, by the end of Sengoku, Western Japan was still anyone's game, and would remain a difficult obstacle for those who hoped to establish real, absolute national power. Nobunaga, of course, had such hopes. With the bothersome Yoshiaki now out of his hair, Nobunaga was free to deal with his enemies without interference from ungrateful shoguns. He was still, at this point, largely surrounded by enemies, but those foes did not have an easy way to network or cooperatively organize. He probably considered the Takeda clan to be his most pressing problem, but he could ill afford to underestimate the Ikkō Ikki, whom the shogun had also implored for help before his unceremonious departure from the capital. The road to unification would not be easy or inevitable. There were 1,000 ways it could go wrong, any number of which could plunge the nation once more into splintered chaos. Nobunaga would need to walk a careful balance between continuing to consolidate the political power he had gained while still maintaining the war machine which he hoped would eventually bring peace and harmony to the land. This is the last official narrative episode for this season. Thank you for joining me during this journey through Sengoku Jidai, which is the period in Japanese history which initially piqued my interest many years ago. Next time, in our first bonus episode, we will discuss the triumphs and mistakes of Uesugi Kenshin as he attempted to bring the Kanto region under his governance. Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.